and they're not.
That's pretty good timing. That's a pretty decent time. It's
pretty good for our end and your end.
No, Luke is in Ottawa and Matt is sick. So it'll be
Luke?
Yeah.
Where's Matt?
Where's Matt?
Matt is sick. Sick like a pig.
Like a swine?
So yeah, there's Pascal, myself, and Greg. Can you see him?
No, we can't.
We have a strong camera. Here he is.
Who's that?
That's Greg.
Well.
Oh, hi. Is Greg new? Is he full time?
No, he's not full time, though. No? I come to participate in classes and sing and do some work on the science. And sometimes I go in the street to organize.
Hey, we lost your sound.
Hey,
really?
Okay. One okay, thing. Because of Skype, plus your French accent, and because you're eating, that was very hard to understand.
they're a mucker.
So, sorry, bear that in mind.
We won't tell you what your accent makes us think of.
What did he say?
Tell me about your accent. Mm. Good day, mate. So we got a Monge day today. So this is why Elfie's here.
How you doing?
She's coming to join us for the first time on a Monge. Has no idea what's going to happen yet, but
okay.
That's good. So who called this?
So yeah, let's. Well, I sent an email to Glenn recently because, as you probably know, we went to the United States a couple of months ago. We had some problems, blah blah, but we went there for 6 months, and we came back in March of this year. Rob's gone, Val's gone.
Wow.
Pretty gone. Pretty mentally gone a bit too. But so the idea, the reason for this call is that we've been discussing here a bit more about the question of really like trying to set down or put the foundations for having a national perspective, which we haven't had for a while because we went to Detroit for 6 months, and also something that was more striking to me recently, and because I had some discussion with a member from France who was here a few weeks ago. We gave two classes, and I just realized that basically we had lost people, but overall we're now 11, including boomers or veterans, whatever you want to call them. And it's a bit stupid to have like a group of four and a group of seven that are supposedly doing their own thing, but it's this weird but obviously also useless division. So I discussed with Jill a little bit about this idea of the CRC, the Committee for the Republic of Canada, which was this name that wasn't really used, but it was used a little bit by the boomers, and Jill made a website. So it sounded a good time to, it felt like a good time to really, go with the CRC and start, having a, I guess, I was thinking about having like a leaflet or something. Can you guys hear me well, or?
Yeah, pretty good, very clear, yeah.
Okay, so like, for example, the idea maybe having a leaflet that would really, like, a huge mass distribution throughout, we can't necessarily go throughout Canada because it's awfully huge, but we got the province of Quebec, the province of Ontario, which which you guys went to as well. What we're going to do today and tomorrow is that today we wanted to talk with you guys about basically your approach. I guess since you came back, but I know that recently you prepared a webcast, and there's probably other things you guys have done which I'm not aware of. And tomorrow we'll be talking with some people in the French movement, because they had this mobilization for distribution of a million leaflet, which ended recently with a big conference, and you know they managed to develop cells and everything. So it was pretty it was an optimistic report, so I was pretty happy about that. So yeah, and so I wanted to know what you guys have been doing, maybe more recently, and also I think it would be useful to discuss when you guys went back to Australia, how things, you know, how basically you got everybody together and said, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. You guys developed the website, the videos, so that's interesting stuff I think we'd like to hear from. And no, just go loose, but just talk about that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. All hell broke loose when we got back.
Really?
When did we get back from? It was February 2007. Mm-hmm. And 1 month after that, we launched there was a movement-wide launch of the campaign to completely demolish the global warming fraud. So within a month of being back, we had a national conference. It was already pre-organized because there was one the previous year when we were all overseas. And at that conference, we had Tony Chaykin, who actually came down a few weeks earlier. Can you flip? Okay, and she's got her hands full. Oh, sorry, 1 second.
Thank you.
So we had Tony Chaykin come down, who over the course of about a month or so worked with, you know, Kat was working with him and helping him in Canberra and down in Sydney and Melbourne to continue to unravel some of this history work that had already been begun earlier around the links between the Australian, like the Republicans in Australia, like John Dunmore Lang, and the circles that he was connected with in the United States. Groundbreaking new history research. So at that conference in March of 2007 was really sort of like the focus point when we got back, where you had, we also had Lance Endersby, who just recently passed away, spoke at that conference as well, talking about this whole fraud of global warming.
And Lynn and Helga.
So they gave us a very clear orientation straight off the bat, which was defeat this fraud of global warming, go straight for the jugular of Australia's environmentalist ideology, the greenie ideology, which is what we did. I mean, coming out of that conference, we went to print on 540,000 copies of our tabloid newspaper, The New Citizen, with that headline which we always show everybody called Global Warming is a Fraud, in just really big black writing. So we printed that and got that circulating in 500,000 copies around the country. That sort of provided the focus for us nationally, and that's also starting at that point. We were able, one of the focuses was on really organizing the population in a mass way. That's what created these like exciting events in Australia over the course of this last month. 2 years on, we didn't have any idea that this would be the outcome or one of the outcomes, but the whole emissions trading scheme, which the Labor Party was trying to ram through, was defeated by the Liberal Party, who are no friends of ours. They're complete scumbags. But the fact that they defeated it reflected emotion in the population that we started 2 years ago. So there's, and we didn't even know that that would necessarily be the case. But that was the immediate orientation coming back out of the trip to the USA. It's not been a smooth sailing. I mean, I may make it sound like it was, but since coming back from the United States, there was this question of the limb taking on a real responsibility, that there was not going to be a fluffy, you know, sort of like what you had is you still had a lot of you know, bullshit and lack of seriousness in really our commitment to the mission orientation of getting the job done. There was a lot of, you know, that kind of infighting and that kind of thing that was still going on, which had to be sorted out. And it was a process, because as we became more committed and more serious to the political orientation, as well as, you know, the intellectual orientation as well, that forced a lot of those people who were here for their own comfort reasons to face that question of whether they wanted to move to a higher level of responsibility or stay in their ways. When we came back from the United States, we were, how many?
14.
And as you guys know, you copped a bit of what was not working for us, and had the right approach been taken, we would have never had that sort of situation.
It started off in 2003.
Yeah.
In October, actually, because we just recruited Yilly Willy. Not to say that people don't have problems and they can't solve them, but we were just recruiting whoever. Like we did, you know, Lainey came over in 2003, and she wanted us to recruit. And so we would, the day before the cadre school, our first ever cadre school, we rang every person we could possibly think of and just try and recruit them to come into the cadre school. I think we recruited two people out of that, but we barely knew them. They hadn't been coming around for a long period of time. They didn't really know what they were joining. And that was the beginning of recruit everybody, not really know what they were recruiting themselves to. And it just became, not to say other people, because I know I had a few problems, but I solved most of those, though. But, I mean, it was a process. It didn't come very easily. But we have to say most. But it's just that we're recruiting them out of the want to recruit, for the hell of recruiting, sort of thing. And I think that's how we got to 14. We had like 20 at one stage, almost, getting on 20. And I mean, we had a lot of quantity, but the quality was lacking.
They're buying a sack of potatoes where 90% of them are rotten.
We should have a lot of potatoes.
Yeah, you'd need someone to like run around chasing out others to do what they had to do, and always constantly pulling others to do what, you know, is necessary, rather than it coming from an internal drive, an internal sense of, you know, this is my identity, this is, you know, a commitment to the highest mission orientation. The problem was there was, I mean, there's, and it, I mean, this is, I mean, similar, no doubt to what you guys have probably been having to deal with there. People have a great potential to do a lot of good if they choose to take that responsibility onto themselves. But that is a very scary process. It's a very scary thing to do because it means you can't sit back and justify your behavior or justify how you behave, you know, like, oh, I can't do this and I can't do that and here's why. You have to resolve in yourself that that's not an excuse anymore.
Which is also, you have to get it, all this other stuff that you've been brought up with in some cases.
Yeah.
Which is messy. It's a messy process. But if you're willing to do it, it makes a world of difference.
We've actually now, we're down to 5 full-time. That is Doug, Kat, Aaron, myself, and Lars.
I'll just say though, I mean,
however,
just describing it as that we're down to 5. It kind of comes across a bit demoralizing, a bit. Oh, you're down to 5 people.
Who's me?
It's a much healthier environment. I mean, we're not dealing with so much, you know, of people's emotional baggage, you know, and but actually, all through the process, it's been about developing a more unified, you know, Lynn local. But, I mean, this question of national identity has also been pretty significant. I mean, there was what Glenn was saying, how this conference we had in February 2007, I mean, this is where Al Gore just got his Academy Award and Lynn sort of put the mobilization on this global warming crap. And we sort of, you know, I mean, everyone was believing it back then here, but we just really led the fight to, you know, get at the axioms. And we've still been doing that this year. I mean, we've had some incredible interventions this year. I mean, to the point where Kevin Rudd, the Prime Minister, is like, he says, oh, I regard Mr. LaRouche as right off the planet. You know, and we had this banner. We went to the ALP conference with the banner saying, what planet are you on, Mr. Rudd? And we had, you know, TV footage on, like, all the national
all but
TV,
not Channel 9.
Virtually all, every TV channel that night.
On Saturday, we revealed what came out of Copenhagen. This is new technology they developed for carbon reduction.
That's good.
Christmas spirit. Hang Santa Claus.
But, you know, it's always been, I mean, earlier this year, for example, we had a pretty tough situation with Lucas, and he was, you know, his was, there's some of his problems that were sort of being a dominant factor, but we were pretty strong in that period, and coming out of that, we actually, you know, decided, hey, we should get our own office. And there was other things involved.
We couldn't have done it
yeah.
in that dynamic at the time.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah, we couldn't have done it.
Oh, yeah, by the way, this you're speaking to us in an office we've had since
July.
We've been organizing out of this office since July. We moved out of the office that we shared with the boomers.
We renovated this for about 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
It needed a lot of, it needed it.
Really?
time, just before we moved office, though, there was a significant campaign for the better part of, campaigns running alongside each other, and it's homeowners and bank protection bill, or act, depending on which, whether you live in the Commonwealth or in a republic. And so we put out that homeowners and bank protection bill, the only solution DVD. I don't know, did you guys catch that? That one?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we spent a fair amount of time. It was a huge learning process to actually put that together, just for the LIM as a whole and just how things integrate and work. But we took on that project as the absolute necessity, is what Liz said. That's the only way we can get out of this mess, is through a bankruptcy reorganization. And so that's, in a sense, formed the absolute key of our mobilization, is that that's always the focus to organize around, and you get the other things that are piled on top as sort of symptoms of the fact that that's what we need to do. The four powers, obviously. And so when this global warming in Copenhagen came up again, we still had the fight that we'd launched back in 2007 ongoing, but it was much more developed now. And as the economy's been disintegrating, despite the lies that all the media say, we've had these campaigns running successively now for about 2 years, 18 months, that have provided that basis for us to always have this, in a sense, an orientation. Even if it's not like specifically defined, that's the general directionality that things are going in. And it hasn't just been us, that's been a national perspective.
Can I just say, on that, there's earlier this year, I'm pretty sure it was either earlier this year or last year, I can't remember when, but we had some discussions, joint CEC LIM discussions in the national office around making a solid commitment to build up a force of 300 organizers. That would be, this is not just LIM, but this is nationwide, having 300 organizers committed to being out on the streets of the country every single week.
At least once.
One person, at least once.
Yeah. So for a total of a week, having 300 individual organizers out there face-to-face with the population in their areas. We're nowhere near that final target yet, because that is a hell of a challenge.
Especially for nine organizers in the
phone room. We got nine?
About that.
We got nine full-time...
Gabby, Robbie, Elisa, Noel, Sleeman, Habibi, Jeremy, Steve, Simon, that's nine. Am I missing anyone?
Four.
Ten. Anyone else? 11, 12. 12.
Yeah.
So 12 now, because we've actually been recruiting boomers to be phone organizers out of this 300, and out of, because it's actually changed their way of looking at organizing. So they've had to sort of change it, and then out of that, they've recruited people to phone them. They're recruiting faster than we are. But we're working on that.
There's this interesting thing about the dynamic of a unified commitment to recruitment. That if you have that as your mission orientation, if that's what you're doing, then, and you really are working towards that, then you can recruit in a way which surprises you. The phone team, who have been really pushing at this 300 by talking to their contacts in every part of the country, to get them to organize, has meant that, new people have come in and have said, hey, this is what I want to do. And they don't know everything, but they see a process underway of, this you know, this idea of this recruitment of a 300 force around the country, and they say, look, I'm in.
Yeah,
I want to do this.
The door down.
Yeah, they beat the door down on us.
It wasn't us saying, hey, join.
Yeah.
They were like, I'm joining.
Yeah, it actually surprised the boomers that you know, that this thing sort of happened. It's like, oh my God, I didn't really expect this to happen. So, which is good.
And then they had to change the way they were looking at it to actually facilitate for these guys to come in.
Yeah.
Which changed the dynamic hugely.
Mm.
There's another part of that which goes unseen because we're not in there all the time, but because we have, what is it, a $34,000 a week budget?
Yeah.
Yeah,
which also, during this process, also has to be raised.
That's the phone thing.
How much you said?
$34,000.
Okay.
and that's what's on the table each week.
Just one thing, this is a footnote to that, they do it every week. I don't think there's many weeks where they don't get it. They're very committed to that.
Part of the orientation of the 300 was also an increase in the number of transactions, which means an increase in the number of actual people. So instead of one person giving $34,000,
every week,
we're looking for more like 1,000 people to give $3.40 or $34.
Yeah.
Which is, this idea of 200. So it's called a 300-200 orientation.
What's the 200?
The 200 contributions.
Oh, yeah, this too.
So getting 200 individuals to contribute in a week to make that $34,000 target for the budget. But also having the target for the constantly anti-entropic growth of your outreach, which is the 300 orientation. Having them out, and it's just interesting to note. I was talking to Gabby in the phone. She was just mentioning that over this Christmas time, because we had a whole bunch of slanders that you guys, I know you guys saw them, that came out because the British, the media were freaking out that Barnaby Joyce was
a senator.
Senator Barnaby Joyce, who's a populist National Party senator in Queensland, was talking about the Armageddon that was the potential Armageddon of a United States default on their debt, and all the media freak out about this because he's the shadow
of all things he could be. He's a bloody finance minister.
The shadow
Barnaby, it does not suit him to be the finance minister. The shadow finance minister of this country. He doesn't get politics, and he said that. Politics, economics, he doesn't get it. So I'm very surprised. No one really gets it. So anybody, shadow finance minister, but he in particular.
So yeah, when these attacks came out on Barnaby for he's channeling LaRouche, that's what they said. He's channeling LaRouche on the front page of the major Australian newspaper called The Australian.
Do they know it goes for whatever the country?
Yeah. Did you guys know that?
Mm-hmm. That was what? It goes all around the country in Australia.
Yeah, it goes all over the country.
It's our only national paper. No,
The one that had the slander in it the other day.
The big
front page attack on LaRouche and Barnaby Joyce, that went all across the nation. And we haven't really had that sort of an exposure in terms of an attack of that size since around 1996. When they really tried to shut us down as a political force. They freaked out. The media said, we've got to bury these guys. And so they ran every kind of complete bullshit they could possibly dig up.
Including putting Linda LaRouche on live television.
Yeah, and then he cornered them and they shut down the interview. It it was funny because the ETS, the what do you call it, the emissions trading scheme, that failed in the House, and I don't know, it failed in general within the Liberal Party, which Barnaby Joyce is actually coalitioned with. So he's not a Liberal Party per se, but they joined with the Liberal Party. But back in 2007, at the Hyatt Hotel, we as the Lib went into the Hyatt Hotel and delivered Global Warming is a Fraud, New Citizen, into every single hotel door, which is quite illegal. Particularly, it's a very big security breach on their behalf. So they weren't going to do a hoo-ha about it because that was their fucker. So we got to do that for every single hotel, and that was aimed at all the journalists internationally around the environment. And out of that came the ABC, they screened the Great Global Warming Swindle. And out of that came people that were, I don't know, it was kind of a process that unfolded. It wasn't A, B, C, D, but out of slowly but surely, a lot of scientists actually came out and started to have guts to say that this wasn't legitimate. It was actually a bunch of bullshit. They weren't willing to say it was genocide and where it was actually coming from. But we had affiliation with a few scientists that came out and did a forum that did that. But, you know, to get that happening, the university wasn't happy. But it was a process. And then you can't. There was actually, I don't know where I'm going with this exactly, but just the process that unfolded.
Barnaby?
Oh, it was a process that unfolded that led to the EPS failing, but also a strong backlash within the population that organised the politicians, right, to back this down. But it's been a process, and what I think with the Australian newspaper is they've seen how effective we can be in terms of shaping the dynamic and shaping things like the Mass Effect. But the Mass Effect's going to be there anyway, but we're shaping a certain dynamic within that. And they see that, and I think that's where the freakouts come from.
Mm. Yeah, it's... Yeah, because they were trying to say that Barnaby Joyce was getting his stuff from LaRouche. There was I don't know, I guess Glenn sent me through the images of the articles. I also posted it on LaRoucheNet, but there was one of them that had the quote from LaRouche back in October where he said the US is heavily indebted to China. But this was when LaRouche was talking about this, the four powers and the whole Russia-China developments. But then they have an arrow pointing to something that Barnaby Joyce said on the same sort of thing, as if they were meaning the same thing. When LaRouche was probably taken totally out of, they take some sentence, you know, and sort of cut and paste it into their own context, and they're totally taking it out of context.
It's like, look here, we have some proof that they're on the same agenda.
Yeah.
That was like taking out of inspiration.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But also to footnote what you said about the mass strike, I mean, back in 2007, a lot of Australians believed in global warming, but, I mean, opinion polls today, it's not as clear cut. There's a big shift, and I mean, there's a lot more people we're finding right now that know that this is bullshit. So.
Well, they're willing to question it, not like go with a religious cult.
Yeah.
Burn people at stake for not believing it.
Yeah. So I mean, around this, around the slanders, we put out a call. Beginning of last week,
Monday.
To have as many of our organisers go out and hit the streets in light of the coverage, to organise. And I was just getting a report from Gabby that we've had the most amount of organisers out during the Christmas, you know, zombie period that I think we've ever had. Mm. I mean, organising out on the streets a week out from Christmas, which, you know, in Australia, when you get into the Christmas break, people just go off. You don't see them until mid-January or late January come back to reality.
Because it's summer here, too. It's a bit closer than the American Northern Hemisphere.
It's not minus 18 outside.
So everyone's got their, like, this dynamic pressure on them to find a beach and find something.
Pressure.
Yeah. that sort of thing. So that's why we actually went out with our carbon trading, our carbon reduction device, you know, the nice rope there we showed you. Yeah. We went out and tried to sell some of them to the public, trying to get them to wake up a bit.
Well, people that were actually wanting to buy it for sick reasons.
Yeah.
God, I don't think some people were joking. It's really...
Some people actually did want to buy the noose.
That's a good idea, because they're saying, you know this thing, big populations start with you. You know all these people that say, oh, you know, the world's overpopulated, and it's like, well, how about killing yourself? I don't think there's a lot of people, I think there's a few people that would agree with that.
Yeah.
They'd probably start for themselves to contribute.
They just don't have the guts to do it.
No.
Yeah, right.
I'll just add, I mean, in this whole period as well, members of the exec, like Gabby,
what's the exec?
The National Executive Committee, been working through a project on looking at the true history of Australia's founding. And, I mean, for the last 15 years at least, the organisation's been on a research pathway or a project to really put together the Republican side of our history, the true history overall of Australia. But a lot of that has been really bringing to the surface the Republican culture that's been here for a long time. But in the last couple of years, we've done a project, or members of the exec have done a project on looking at the founding of Australia and the period when Australia was founded in 1788, which was just after the American Revolution. And I mean, basically, the British were so worried about Australia becoming another America, and this was pretty open in some of their bigwigs, like Sir Francis Baring from Baring's Bank. He said we are nourishing a serpent in Botany Bay. But they basically, we uncovered the history of the treatment that was given to the people who came out here, and in terms of, it was pretty brutal stuff, that they actually used slave trading ships and modified them, and people were chained up for the whole journey, 6 or 8 month journey.
Have you guys seen that New Citizen?
No,
not yet.
We should post you some hard copy.
Yeah. It's a full color paper, and there's very, very good. Well, in some ways.
Capital.
I was going to bring a big paper because I couldn't find a.
There's good graphics, yeah.
I couldn't find a
there you go.
I couldn't find a paper
mill. Yeah, I got the internet copy. I got
a PDF.
Wow.
Pardon?
You have the PDF for that, I think.
We'll send you some hard copies, because it's pretty good as a hard copy.
Have you guys seen it at all?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Sort of PDF.
Yeah. No, it's pretty good to organize with. It gives you a real sense of why Australians do some of the things that they do. We're pretty bad bunch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you guys in the same office that you were when we left?
No.
It doesn't look like it.
I don't recognize that space behind you.
Yeah.
It's a new old office.
Where are you guys?
We were on Saint Denis before, now we're on Saint Laurent.
Where are you guys?
Around the same metro, around Jerry.
Is that in the green line?
No, orange line.
I don't know why I can remember that.
Remember what?
That it was orange 6 months ago.
No, I know. I knew that one was on the orange line, but I thought that was closer to that main one where you get off.
It's around the same area.
Just to let you know how Canada, how Montreal's laid out, by the metro. We know where things are.
That's true.
Yeah. It's a better office that we have now.
Oh, good.
Are the boomers there too?
Yep.
With you guys?
Mm-hmm.
Are they downstairs?
No, we're on the same level.
Okay.
So, you guys, I'm interested to know how you guys are coordinating or interacting with, like, the movement as a whole nationally. You guys said you had seven old veterans there.
Just before that.
Okay.
There's also a significant shift that occurred at the beginning of this year, which is when Craig.
Started at the end of last year.
Craig, who's the leader of the organization, stood up and actually put a much more public face as the real alternative. And so he's been doing a lot more on the road.
He had like 70 to 100 meetings in about 2 months.
Yeah.
Like with politicians, institutions, people that are supporters. He's been doing classes for all the different groups, like all the different supporters around the country. So wherever he'd have a meeting, like a institutional meeting, he'd do a presentation / class to these people. And they'd have full-on slog dialogue, back and forth for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm very excited that Craig is coming out to, nut some of his ideas out. I think that's also where the 300 started to stem from, because he was able to get them to act on what he was saying and what he was talking about.
He was able to get to know them and actually have a dialogue with them.
We're all excited.
The process was that he became sort of the face of this 300, 200 that people would, and this came out with the emails, and everything that we're organizing there. Craig is the leader of the real opposition in the country, because there is no other opposition. And this is who the people identify with, in a sense, as the face of the organization. It had been done for like the last 19 years, but never in a way that it's been so upfront that he was going out there, he's on radio shows, he's doing all of these
things. He's up until 1 in the morning now.
Doing
every Tuesday.
Doing these different public events, but also that's what allowed them, after a year of organizing around with this as he being, in a sense, the public face. He wasn't driving everything, but he was the public face of the momentum, and that culminated in the webcast,
mm-hmm.
which we just had recently, which is about a year on from when we really went balls to the wall with this 300, 200 perspective.
But the webcast also came in the geometry of the four powers.
Yeah, I was going to say that, out of what Lindsay's saying.
And the fact that Lynn, I mean, it's pretty ironic that Lynn's been bringing up the breakup of the Commonwealth being led by Canada, Australia, and India.
But this is why I think the media or the establishment are so freaked out right now, because there is that sort of potential and they don't want it to be unleashed. Because they see what has been created in the sense, and they want to shut it down now to the back of the box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're scared that the box is going to be unraveled, like open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this whole, this discussion Lynn's had around the Pacific-centered world, that, we're getting away from a transatlantic, British Empire orientation, but the shift is going to the Pacific, and this, sort of, it was a perfect opportunity to have this webcast, and I'm sure it's just going to be the first of many. Yeah. Do you guys have any questions?
I have a question.
Oh, go on. Sorry.
Jean-Philippe, you're probably the best qualified in terms of historically that for this committee for the Republic of Canada. If I remember correctly, when Rob and I went to Vancouver, that's what we had on top of the leaflets that we're handing out. And I know there was talk about, candidates being run under that name in regional elections and elections and things like that. Is that something which you're thinking about going forward with, like, establishing an actual political party sort of thing in Canada under that name?
I would say so. The problem that we had was that we had the CRC was seen as, if you remember, you probably remember Gilles Gervais. Hard to forget. But so the idea was to, I think, just to reactivate this thing, because he has been doing a few, I would call that boomerish things, which is to have, Gilles' problem was this idea that, he's going to have a movement, but he's not going to do any outreach. So it'll be a very small movement, right? Then saying, oh, at least I'm there, but I'm not going to publicize things. So Matt, for example, would just go see Jill and say, hey, Jill, how about we use CRC and we can do this and do that? And Jill would go crazy and then, go completely paranoid that it would just use CRC and, I don't know. He was just afraid of something bad happening. But recently, I just discussed with him very, very calmly about, says, look, you're making a website, so how about, and the website actually much better than ours, because ours was, it showed a bit how disorganized we were, but it was this mixture of actually stuff that you have on the LPAC. I mean, if you've seen it, like there's not much stuff Canadian. If there is anything Canadian in there, it's all hidden. And even the classes that we produce every week are not, they're hard to get to. So the website was pretty pathetic. So we decided, well, let's try to go with that. Let's try to calm Jill down, which did happen. So we just said, well, look, you have a website. So if we're, for example, to have a leaflet, saying, okay, let's get out a 250,000 leaflet throughout Quebec, Ontario, and hopefully the rest of Canada, we'll have to put CRC on it, the Community for the Republic. And he agreed to that, and he says, okay, well, let me just see the leaflet before we get it out. So it was like whoa, okay, that's an important breakthrough. So I brought this up to the other guys, because whatever mobilization was done with the CRC was always done through New Jersey as well.
Right.
Montreal was like, a local of New Jersey. Yeah.
We were talking about yesterday or a couple of days ago that Canada joined, Canada became the Canada Movement out of default because the America, you guys were working with, in America, and then when Lynn and the attacks came on the movement over there in America, you guys had to, the Canadians had to go back to Canada. And it's sort of, it's been sort of like a reaction formation from that standpoint.
Is that accurate?
Is that accurate or?
No, the, at a certain point with the, I just go back maybe a bit, but with the Fernando, defend Fernando Quijano period, there was an attempt to shut down Montreal Local and to just, you know, bring everybody to New Jersey or something like that. So there were a few fights against that, including not just Gilles, but also a guy named Jerry Pineson, which some of you might know. He was, well, he's still in New Jersey. More, see, we did a lot of going back and forth in the United States, and the last time, we went, when Pascal and I went to Detroit, Matt went to L.A., etc., it's pretty much because we were here under certain pressure, certain, I mean, there was a lot of disorganizing. Val was going crazy with his religion, which was a big part of the problem as well. He was disorganizing everything. Rob
Did you join a monastery?
Was
she going to become a nun?
No, I don't think so. It's a religion. It's part of a bigger group of a fundamentalist church in the United States, who has very big people like Karl Rove involved.
Oh boy!
So there's actually a lot of anti-Arab propaganda on their website.
Creative an operation.
So we were told to go down to the United States for 6 months, for as long as possible. We could have actually stayed longer, but no, we did it. Let's try 6 months. Luke stayed here because there was a few problems, and he didn't help his cause by making a couple of crazy comments to Bruce, but he stayed here, whatever. And so we went down. And when we were about to come back, we met with Rob, who was in D.C., so we had a good discussion.
Rob.
Yeah. So we had a good discussion about things that we want to do, but it was very technical. It was like, for example, what you stressed about this idea of having 300 organizers is a national mobilization. Or writing interesting articles about stuff that happened here doesn't necessarily mean that you really have a national direction. It just means that you know a couple of issues here and there. But it still can be, it can still confuse both, you know. You think you're in the right direction, but it's just Cartesian. It's just linear. But at that point, we had a sense that Rob was a bit disorganized by this Valerie thing. So finally, we came back, the five of us, and just Rob just started to work, and we didn't really see him around. And we found out he was involved as well in some fundamentalist business. Now he's studying history at the University of Ottawa. But through all that, we managed to have certain mobilizations around, like in September. Last September, we had a French version of the September webcast of LaRouche. So we went to Quebec City, and we had a bigger mobilization to Toronto, Ottawa, Quebec City, and Montreal on the Obama question, which is very... In Canada, obviously, everybody watches the United States, and Obama is loved by a lot of people here. So it was very, very polemical campaign that sometimes was hard, but it didn't really bear fruit. And more, and we've been following our mobilizations centered around the webcast coming one after the other. And the Copenhagen thing recently was also pretty good, where we organized pretty much just organized against ecology, against the British, against Obama, putting all that together. And it was good because we saw that a lot of people didn't agree with the green stuff. That was a good, I guess, a week or 2 weeks organizing. So, yeah, I guess I went a bit off track, but...
Jean-Philippe, I wanted to point out something that you were reflecting on just recently in some, you know, we've also had to, like, work out, like, what our orientation should be in this question of the work that the LIM does, because we are an institution, we're the youth arm of the CEC and the Rouge Movement. One thing that we've realized is, when it came to things like intellectual work and other type of work, like Kepler, for example, and other things, is that if... Yeah, I was going to... not muted yet. I'm still hearing myself.
Can you guys mute your ends? Because we're getting Glenn's feedback.
I think they
can. Oh, that's a bit better. Okay. What we were reflecting is that, like, there was a certain... just stagnation that set in on the intellectual work, because it wasn't, we were sort of trying to, you know, get through the work, read through the Kepler, you know, keep moving forward, as though somehow we had to emulate what was being done by the United States or something like that.
We shouldn't be talking to you right now because this isn't in our schedule. We should be doing singing.
And what?
Ha ha. Yeah, it was going to be a ha ha.
What happened was we realized that our nation's unique. And Australia's always been in this sort of a condition because we are so far away from the United States. We're so far from Europe that we've always been forced into a position where we had to work out what strategically we had to do as an institution for Australia, which means that a cut and paste model, or what Ouyang talks about, the cookie cutter model, doesn't work. That if you take a mobilization that the United States is doing and just say, oh, well, this is what was said on off the cuff, let me just tell my contacts this from off the cuff, and this is what's going to organize them, as though we're an appendage of the United States, doesn't work, because you're dealing with a unique nation with a unique culture and a history, which is that you have to understand. And I think there's a certain, we've been forced to always take what Lynn is saying and take what is being done elsewhere in the world and say, well, what must we do here that is going to be strategic for us to get the job done, to develop Australia, to get a republic here, and make ourselves damn important? And it doesn't come from just taking what the United States does and applying it wholesale, but working out what is going to be the direction for Australia. And we've always... It means that you sort of have to really think through what Lynn is saying in his webcast and what he's saying in, you know, his writings. And, okay, this is what the United States are doing. What are we doing to act on an international level, but Australia acting on an international level? And, yeah, I think that that was something pretty important for I mean, I think that's very important because you do need to have a certain national orientation. And because you guys are so close in proximity to the United States, I don't know, that could be something which is challenging. Because you've got
also
this.
Also, who is Canada?
Yeah,
and
what? Who
Canada's,
is Canada?
And what's Canada's identity?
Yeah.
Because that would be a challenge.
Well, obviously, because just.
You're
recently,
mute.
Yeah. Just recently, for example, we've been. We're always in contact with Boston. Sometimes more often than other. But with their campaign, we're going to have Rachel Brown running. So obviously the question for us was, well, okay, should we go? Like, it's close, it's pretty important, so why don't we just go? But then obviously I said, well, we're not going to go back again another six months, you know. We're not just coming back here to say hi to friends. We're here to develop a movement, you know. So, you know, we might go, like, just like that. Or I know they have stuff prepared, like cadre schools, et cetera. But it has to be a reason for why we're here. I would admit that it might be, and I guess to me, I maybe sometimes I just don't ask myself the question really, what's the difference between organizing in the United States or here? So I might get comfortable with just, you know, going with what you get in the briefing and what the, you know, just organizing very similarly to how you would do it in the United States, and not thinking about those differences. Being close, this proximity, I guess, has been a bit, created more challenge, I think, to define what we want to do here. It does affect.
Well, anybody else says this question of the Committee for a Canadian Republic sounds very CRC, CEC.
Yeah.
I think it's an important direction to really think through, but one thing that's always been there for CEC has been essentially, it was set up by Craig, my father, right? It was set up as a populist party that became affiliated with the Rouge, and that had its own consequences. But it really was a decision by him and Marlene to...
Your mother?
My mum.
Oh, well, her husband.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marlene and Craig are married.
Yeah, that's...
Right? My mum and dad. And essentially, it was their commitment to make the CEC work. And as I said, it fell on their shoulders. They built this thing up. They moved it to Melbourne. They built it up. Literally, they put their own money in. They were the ones who did all the phone work and the recruiting to begin with, to pay for the office, the bills, everything like that. And everyone said they were crazy.
Yeah.
It won't work. It won't work. There was still a grouping of supporters around him. Without that person who actually really led, who made that commitment, and it's a commitment that he's held ever since. He's always, in a sense, been the leader of the CEC. He created it, in a sense. And that's what, when you're thinking about like the CIC, it can't be kind of like just a blob. Of where there's a grouping of people, they decide to call themselves a name. You really need to have a committed group or an individual who's going to lead the thing and, in a sense, take ultimate responsibility to push it. And I think it's going to, at this period in history, I mean, when the CEC was formed, Craig was still a youth.
He was 21.
No,
28.
28. Yeah, he was only 28.
Oh, fuck.
When he decided to do this.
Yeah.
So he wasn't like a washed up tweener or a boomer or somebody who had this cool idea of establishing a political party. It was something that came about very deliberately. And he took responsibility for that. And so it's whether it's a grouping of people, because there was a grouping of people around him that did, but it was kind of like that. You get this group of people and like, who's going to lead this? Who's going to be the driving force around us? And I think that's the one thing you really have to think about if you're going to establish or re-establish a political orientation, a political party if you want in Canada, is to really think, okay, is Jill going to be the person who's going to be the public face of this? it may be his creation way back when, but or something like that. But if it's going to be reconstituted, it's exactly that, reconstituted, and it's going to come with a new leadership in a sense, which is going to do what it from that standpoint. And I think this is where the youth is going to be key, because it's with that, it's actually, in a sense, the lifeblood of the organization, as Lynn said, is the youth. It's not the old rusty boomers.
But then out of that also, that dynamic then brings new people around, which, because I think, since we've really changed in the way we've been looking at things, we've actually been bringing new people around.
Mm-hmm.
And it's starting to get going.
Yeah,
the boomers might be, in a sense, recruiting. I mean, these are the young guys that are being recruited into the phone room. They're not youth, but they're not old either.
No, they're not.
But it's a dynamic, and that dynamic is really being shaped by what the youth are doing. The free energy, in the sense of the system that we are, that has the intellectual development, that is, in a sense, really nutting down on the questions of policy. It creates the leader and everything like that, but really, at the end of the day, one of the key things when that was done is that the youth were his, in a sense, his advisors.
That's kind of stopped, though.
Well, as a direct sort of, hey, youth advise me, but indirectly.
well, there's been
it's a collaborative effort to the point where in the last,
Last few weeks, we've had a...
In the last month and a half, the limb have been brought into a lot more of the discussion around the executive decisions that are made amongst the leadership.
Yeah, we're on the team.
Because we are on the same team, we are fighting the same enemy. We might have different weapons in the war, and we might, like the light horsemen and the cavalry and then you've got the soldiers, but the point is it's the same war. And it's so interesting to think about when you're talking about like the CRC is that it's a nice idea, but unless there's a real commitment for it to be led and to somebody stand up and take ultimate responsibility for it rather than sort of a round table, everybody's democratically going to agree sort of approach, it's the quality of leadership that you see with Lynn that you need to make it work. Otherwise, it'll fall apart, like we've seen happen all too often in Australia with political movements. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just in a sense something to think about. It just struck me that, I mean, what you said about Jill and Jill having, like, looking over the leaflet and things like that to be okay with it so he doesn't freak out. And if you're going to reconstitute the CRC based on the ideas of what you guys really see as the way forward, then it's going to come with a certain change in that dynamic.
No, that's obvious. It's just a... Well, my idea was, as I was saying at the beginning, is say, okay, we have four youth who have a different approach, a different background as well. We're the ones in touch with, Boston, the war room, and we're the ones that has to lead that thing. So when I spoke with Jill, the first thing I told him is, says, well, look, why don't we have at least a joint approach to the work that we're doing. But obviously, it's obvious that nothing is going to come out on its own from the boomer circle. They had a hard city, like, you know, in terms of the finance, it's very hard. So when we left for Detroit, it just went even worse, probably because, you know, there was probably some more pessimism in their group and their, like, for example, the quota, who was about $6,000. They've been doing mainly like around half of it most of the time, and when we left, then they shrank to 2,000. And so it was whether 1,500 to 2,500, like out of reach, so it's, which is extremely low. So accumulate debts, and I guess we should consider ourselves lucky that some that members of the families of some of our boomers have been dying, so that we get some of their money. That's how you pay debt. You know, you wait for someone to have a heart attack, which is not a good way to recruit people either.
Maybe the boomers, if they have the will, should come and work with the Australian phone system.
Yeah.
The thing is, it only works if you have the will.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. There's, I think that there's a potential for collaboration. But,
yeah.
You know, it's obvious that if we start this thing well, that's what I'm more concerned about. Let's start something. You know, okay, we might do mistakes here and there, but while we start this, then in order to keep going, you'll need the four of us. And if it works, well, the other guys will get their optimism back, or partially at least, and we'll be able to keep going from that standpoint. And just grow and grow and, you know, keep in touch with the leadership, et cetera, et cetera. And do what has to be done so that the boomers don't. We'll just pull back and say, well, tell us what to do. That's pretty much what should happen.
Yeah.
Right? Not, that was a funny thing with when Benoit, this guy from France, who used to be a member here, he's Canadian, and he would tell us all these things about Jill, how Jill used to be great. So it was very annoying. But you know, I don't care if it was like that. Today, it's not. It's really not. So, if Jill wants to do more, if he wants to write, you know, articles, that's fine. But he's not in a position where he's going to lead anything. That's the obvious thing. So it's really up to us to get that thing going.
What's your contact base there? How many, if you had to say, like, if you take the whole of Canada, you say, what are you dealing with in terms of a support base out there? People who could readily organize if you would pick up a phone. I mean, maybe not pick up a phone, but of a quality of development that they could, you know, join you on a deployment that could take their area and make something happen.
Obviously, Montreal is where we have most of our contacts. By far.
Well, that's where you've been organized.
Recently, the last few weeks, we've been able, because of the webcast, we're using the webcast and go to Ottawa, which is 2 hours pretty much from Montreal.
Wait, that's the national.
The capital.
Yeah.
And it was strictly campus organizing. We didn't bother with the leaders or anything, the MPs. And we had two showings of the webcast, and I think there was a contact. We had like a few subs and stuff. I know there's one contact there that helped us get the room. Who might be.
Good.
There's one guy over there that we know is getting very good, sharp. It's still pretty recent, but he's reading this stuff. He came to both webcasts we showed. That's it for Ottawa. There's some older people. There might be a few tweeners or boomers that are sensibly good. Rob is over there, but I wouldn't try to activate him too much. leave him with his thoughts for a while. And in Montreal, we have, I'll say, about 5 to 10 people that in the last few months did organize. Greg's part of them. And we had Ahmed, we had Christine, this guy Meredith.
So, oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, the Meredith was about 40, but it's a good mind. He's coming to the Moj Brigade. So I would no, just because I don't know everything, but I would say that's a pretty 5 or 10 people that came organized with us. And we have
we have also, well, I would just add on this, we have also some gathering in Vancouver where I mean, it's not us that is, you know, we're not doing the work of organizing them from Montreal, but it's from Seattle. Yeah, people like Paul Glumas, who's organizing, I think it's once every 2 weeks, they have a meeting of, you know, it's mostly people who were activated around 9/11, you know, these kind of groups. But are going to our events too, and contributing. Yeah, exactly. So they go maybe like a, you know, a team of three, four people, a small group, but they manage to get a lot of, you know, a good crowd, and. But I don't know to what level these guys are, you know, activated, really, like how they're being kept. That's a bit our status. We have a lot of people that actually are being called from the United States by phone team members from the United States that we don't know, but they're here in Canada. They're Canadians.
So.
This is somewhere where having a real national perspective and a national movement, especially if you, in a sense, what is the movement called in Canada? Is it just the LaRouche Movement Canada?
So far.
So if you have something like the Committee for the Republic of Canada as a national, in a sense, as a body that represents the interests, the actual real interests of a nation of Canada, then you also, the Seattle guys that are organizing Vancouver, I mean, the better people will, in a sense, also organize this question around the national part of Canada. And I think if there's no vehicle for that, I mean, if there was no CEC and we were just LaRouche in Australia, we would not have the quality of people in our regions, in our satellite areas that we have, because there is a very sense that there is a necessity for a national perspective as well as an international one. Especially when you think about the development of the resource base in Canada, that's not going to happen via the United States. It's going to happen actually with the four powers. Is going to happen is Canada being a national sovereign nation within that context. So this idea of the Committee for the Republic of Canada is, in a sense, also an ability to unify a lot of those contacts. And you'll find there'll be a lot more people who may even get involved because there is actually a national perspective as well that is a lot more clear.
Yeah, like having a, like, hey, you know, having a national organization, like what Aaron's saying, a Committee for the Republic of Canada, to get them to join as a member, or, you know, hey, we're organizing to free Canada from the Queen, or whatever, you know, but actually, instead of, I mean, like, I'm, you know, probably some of these people in Vancouver have a certain, you know, they've probably been organized around, like, EIR, like, you know, which is not bad, but it's not, you know, being organized around a, okay, well, what can we do to change Canada? And I think might be a bit of a battle, but some of these contacts that America has from Canada, I mean, I reckon they should be organized in Canada. That's really
well, this passport, they can be organized from Seattle. But if they also are in a sense getting marching orders from a national body, in Canada for Canada's interest. Then you're going to have an increase in the power of organizing.
Mm.
And you give an ability for somebody to commit themselves to the ideas of a national organization. Mm. So you might find that some guy in Humpty Doo, where is it? Up north there in Alberta, decides, hey, I like these ideas. I want to be more involved with this organization. Comes around.
Bring it up now. Yeah, sure.
That could be a good one for you guys.
Yeah.
Just change a few faces. Because this is one of our prime ministers, Menzies. That's our prime minister currently, Kevin Rudd. So ex-prime minister just being John Howard, Paul Keating, the guy that sold off the National Bank, along with, Bob Hawke, who sold off the Commonwealth Bank too. Because a lot of the irony also with this is some of these guys are actually Labour Party. And you look back at the history of the Labour Party, and they were old Labour fighting the British Empire and the money power. And you go onto the ALP, the Labour Party's website, some of these guys that belong to that party, you actually have King O'Malley, who founded the government-owned bank. You have people like Ben Chifley, who was fighting the British, and John Curtin, who was collaborating with Franklin Roosevelt. That's in on their website, but they're going the total opposite direction to what their party actually represents, which is that's what they're going towards, kissing the British butt. But because we spoke to, just one footnote on that, we spoke to Wayne Swan, the treasurer of the country currently, and he said to Glenn, he said, and this is Ben Chifley, the Prime Minister of Australia, he was what Labor should represent. That's what he was representing, Ben Chifley. This is at a Ben Chifley Research Institute presentation. Does that make sense so far? Where the treasurer of the country at this research committee under Ben Chifley's name said that the National Bank would be stupid, irresponsible, and would create unemployment. Stupid, destructive, and create unemployment. And he also denies that, the system's bankrupt. These guys are in total denial. And then on their website, they're promoting pro-labor when they're totally kissing the Queen's butt, like on that sign.
Mm.
It's a bit of an irony. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Send us the sign.
Send it.
Yeah,
where? Yeah.
Hey, not the whole sign, but the the JPEG.
We'll send you an image.
You know, I think I brought that up because someone was bringing up the British Empire.
I was talking about getting the Queen out of Canada.
Ah, yeah, that's why I brought it up.
Yeah.
And then I thought of this.
Yeah.
We really piss off a lot of, like, I mean, because in the country regions around Australia, there's been a really romantic, entrenched monarchism. Like this, we love the Queen, you know, that kind of thing. And it's funny, we always have these funny images like this one that Kat showed you, but yeah, recently we had this one of this little, like, 6-year-old kid kicking the, like, kicking the Queen off, like standing on the Australian continent, like with a boot on, kicking the Queen up the butt, and the Queen flying off the continent.
It's on the front of the Australian Alert Service.
Yeah, we had this sign with this little boy kicking the Queen off the continent of Australia, like, and she's got her, like, she's holding her suitcases, and it's really funny because we get, like, we've got this email system where we're constantly emailing, like a million emails.
Our friend last night, we were over dinner at a friend's place, and she said, "I get your emails at work." Yeah, it's really funny.
Oh, wow.
She even gets them. It's because of... Everybody's getting them.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Glenn. We...
Oh,
yeah, I just wanted to say that because I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, no, we've got a... We're sending out a million emails a week, several times with statements, CC statements, because we can get away with it. The laws allow our political parties to do that here. And we always get these responses back, like, you guys are bastards because, you know, you hate, like, and they love the Queen and they get really insulted when we attack the Queen. But it's only a few, but it always makes your day when you know you're pissing off an arch-monarchist. It's really good because you know you're upsetting the...
You shouldn't have any trouble going out in Quebec.
No, God, no.
I hear you guys have a Prime Minister of Quebec now.
What? It's called the Premier.
Oh, really? I read somewhere where there was a Prime Minister of Quebec or something.
It's just the provincial level, but that's how they call it in French.
Is the Premier the same as what we have as a Premier?
The leader of a state or province?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like my Premier.
So then you have a Premier that's the leader of Montreal, but not Quebec?
No.
Of the province.
Okay. It's like John Bromby.
Oh, in Quebec. Oh, that makes sense.
Oh, I read somewhere where Quebec had a Prime Minister as though they were...
That's the French way to say it.
I think that's the French
newswire. It's wishful thinking. A nation within a nation. That is funny. Just out of interest, Pascal, remember that MP that wanted to come to our webcast in the United States? Remember that MP?
Okay,
he's from the Quebec
Bloc. Oh, yeah. We're still in touch with them.
Sorry?
We're still in touch with them.
Oh, good.
It's so-so. You know, we're briefing
them. Yeah.
It's not, yeah. He's not sold to the idea.
He wanted to come to a webcast. To see him speak, and I reckon he would if you organize him to do it.
Because
I remember him wanting to do it. It was
we asked him. The last thing we did was to ask him to with the MP to prepare a webcast at the Parliament.
Ah.
And we had like. Somewhat of a confirmation at the meeting when Luke met him, but it didn't quite work.
Yeah, I think I don't know what you guys have been doing with him and all that sort of stuff, but I reckon that getting him into Lynn, like getting him around Lynn, would actually really organize him. I don't know how if it's changed or whatever now, but. That was the sense that I got from him last time.
Uh-huh.
That would really make or break him in a sense.
Make it
not make or break, but sort of develop him further.
Yeah. It's hard to say, like, we haven't really done any work with the MPs since we were back from the United States, so it's... We don't really have a sense of what disposition they are in right now.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, it's pretty chaotic.
Yeah.
I mean, the party that he's in is actually pushing for euthanasia.
No.
I know, but that's the paradox. It's like the bloody... They're all these bloody people within the party are such paradoxes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I reckon you wouldn't even agree with that. They join these parties and they have to toe the party line, but they don't even believe what they're voting for.
Do you guys manage to do some... I guess some work in the capital and talk to your own MPs or.
Yeah. Actually, back in June, July in 2008, we ended up having about 33 meetings within 2 or 3 weeks around the food crisis, and around there was another one around the food crisis. The most meetings were around the food crisis, and it was crazy. We were like swept off our feet because there was only 6 of us, actually 5 of us, because Aaron wasn't here. He was in America.
Yeah.
And then we didn't end up meeting with a lot more people, and so we've only done 2 Optum meetings this year. But.
Yeah, we've really, I mean, the focus has really been on this 300, 200.
Yeah, that's true.
And when something like our new citizen comes out, we've met with some members, we've sent it to them, things like that. But it seems like the developments that happened recently in the Liberal Party around the emissions trading scheme, is the work of what we've been doing with this mass outreach, this mass organizing approach, that actually it was the population that caused it to happen. Yet the MPs had our ideas, they get our emails and things like that. But it is a lot of energy and effort to go and meet with these members. And we've only done it twice this year, once at the beginning of the year, once at the end of the year. They know very well who we are, what we stand for, all of that sort of stuff. They know our contact details if they want to get in contact with us.
I was just going to say, we've also got, as a footnote to that, we've also got people all around the country organising these guys constantly anyway. So they're always being bombarded from different angles, some more than others, but particularly in the north region of Queensland. The very northern part of Australia, even in WA. But
we let the supporters organise their local member. Their foots tend to connect with their rear ends a lot more often.
Yeah. Also, the community cabinet meetings, the Labor Party, since the Rudd government has been getting in, they had these meetings where they will go around different regions of the country and address the public. And there'll be about 400 people in the event. It's a free event to see these guys, talk about whatever they're doing and promoting whatever the freaking hell they're doing. Which, it's all show. Not to say they shouldn't be communicating with the population. They should be. It's not a bad thing.
They try and rub them up the right way.
And what will happen is they'll have a public meeting where it's everybody, and then they'll have all the different ministers meet these different groups that they want to meet with, which the ministers want to meet with, and we've got a few meetings quite a few times with them. But Jan Kallis in Queensland asked a question to the Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, and she basically, I can't remember the question, but she didn't even finish her question. We've got it on DVD, you can have a look at it, send it to you. There's a video on the website. If you haven't looked there, it says, what planet are you on? No, that's mine.
No, what planet are you on, Mr. Rudd?
Oh, yeah, but isn't it two?
No, yours is the computer.
Yeah, what planet are you on, Mr. Rudd? And Jan asked the question, and the Prime Minister cuts Jan off and says, if it's everything in regards to LaRouche, I regard him as right off the planet. And it's kind of like, well, what the hell, what planet are you on then?
That was about a month and a half after Aaron got up in there. The one, yeah, that was about a month and a half after Aaron got up with one here in Victoria and put the question of bankruptcy reorganisation on the table and getting a government bank and all the population, and they started clapping and applauding, and then Crud had to come in and
he was doing something.
Yeah, like, yeah, pretend to answer the question.
Well, you may know that I've been at the G20, and this is... This is the sort of thing that me and Gordon have been talking about.
He keeps bringing that up.
And then afterwards, Aaron gave him an EIR with deficits of capital gains paper, how to capitalize a recovery, and a new citizen and a DVD.
No, it's just the EIR.
Oh,
okay. New citizen.
EIR with our infrastructure, new citizen.
No,
the latest new citizen we had at the time, and... yeah.
Then six weeks later. Hang on, before you change that, we got on the alert service, on the newsletter.
They went out to everybody
of our members. It had a picture of Rudd with our EIR under his arm. Prime Minister of the country having an EIR under his arm, and that went out to our whole base.
Yeah.
Which is pretty funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, what were you going to say?
Oh yeah, and that created the the environment for Jan to get up 6 weeks later at the meeting in Queensland and as Kat said, you know, which forced Rudd to say, you know, I regard Mr. LaRouche as right off the planet.
And then our Minister for Infrastructure on a radio station, he said he was asked, are any of the questions rigged in your community cabinet meeting? And Anthony Albanese said, well, no, because the Citizens Electoral Council are always asking questions.
Yeah.
So every community cabinet meeting...
That would be great for letting the CEC ask questions.
Yeah, right.
But it was just after that they started reading them. Straight after that, they realised that they couldn't allow unscreened audiences into the community cabinet meetings. So they started hand-picking the audience and showing up in towns unannounced.
I know. Now they give you half a week's notice to register.
So, yeah, you...
Normally, it's 2 weeks. They give you 1 week's notice.
Yeah.
And they give you 1 week to register. Now it's a half a week.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that? I've noticed that. Yeah. I couldn't even register or get anybody to do it because it already cost.
Yeah, yeah,
nothing
right.
Less than half a week.
Yeah. So...
Also, I am the prime. Well, I don't know if it's much to say, really. I mean, he knows of Lynn. It's quite obvious that he knows of Lynn. He's got a big ego, that Prime Minister.
Yeah, right.
Our Prime Minister is very much like Obama, psychologically.
Big ego.
Yeah, he's a British agent,
as
the new citizen describes.
Kevin, and we call it Kevin 007.
Yeah.
You guys have any questions down that end?
Any comments?
Jump in. Uh-oh.
You know, jump in. Uh-oh.
Break yourself.
I was just wondering, now you guys had a webcast. I have to apologize, I haven't watched it yet. But I was just wondering, what's your direction right now? What are you aiming at accomplishing for the next few weeks and months?
Sure.
Well, in the coming year, over the break, we're currently working on... Well, we're not personally yet.
We're an organisation.
But as an organisation... We are going to be printing in sometime January an organizing tutorial booklet. Well, tutorial, not, it's going to be a conceptual organizing tool to bring new organizers up to par with the crucial concepts of things like Australia's history,
the true the concept of empire and monetarism, to, so people understand what is meant by things like when we talk about the British Empire. Also, how to give people a better grasp of how the Australian culture was shaped by Venice. The ugly part of the Australian ideology, the Australian culture was shaped by Venice through their influence on things like art and other things, which we're still waiting to get a report on that. And it's going to contain also, you know, just key sections of Lynn's writings and talks and whatever. I don't know the full story, but that is going to be produced in, I think, about 1,000 copies and targeted to go to the 300 type organizers, to our best people, so they can really study it. It's as a sort of like a curriculum. That will be released sometime in January to intensify the process. I mean, we've had one national webcast already, just like past. It won't be a one-off. There'll be more of them in the new year. A long-term project, which is currently not really being worked on because we've got to recruit, is an idea of producing a video to expose the genocidal eugenic roots of the Greenie movement in Australia, to blow apart the whole, you know, this whole movement of the Greenie environmentalists. That will happen sometime in the new year, next year, or maybe even not. I'm not sure. It's currently not something that we're working on.
Something that comes into more dominance of at least in our thought patterns after this book was done too.
That's currently where we are.
I mean, also
election year next year too.
I mean, also we've been, we're sort of in amongst everything that we've talked about in terms of our own environment here. We've started to go on more a question of getting contacts out in the street, organising with us, and a real unified drive. Yeah.
Yeah. There's been actually just recently, because of a few different things that we've had to work through.
Yeah.
After we worked through them, I've noticed that we've gotten a lot more people coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just been more, more motion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What one thing that we have kept going in this process, which sometimes gets quite tough being just five of us, is the weekly student meetings. We've been on Saturdays we have our meetings at 3, and we've been, you know, getting a sort of a regular group of people, that are coming around. And so getting these people to come out organising on the streets and...
I've noticed 3 o'clock has been a good time to have it, because people aren't so, Saturday night, gotta go. They're more likely to actually hang around after the meeting at 6 and have dinner with us than what they would be to come to me at 7 o'clock. And it'll go to whatever time. I just find it a lot more, because you've got more time for dialogue also, and they're more willing to stay around to have a dialogue at 6 o'clock and then it'll be at 11, which I think has also helped to be able to start to get people out as well. It's been a whole, I'm not saying it's a reason,
no.
But it's been a whole last for things, like one of them.
For them to get to know us and us to get to know them and figure out what they're up to. And
the other thing that's been helpful is that we've also, for our benefit, not just for like contacts, we instituted that on Wednesday nights we would sit down and, in a sense, catch up with the strategic latest from what's coming out of the basement crew. So like this New York class series, the 8-part series, we've been watching each week as it comes out, and inviting contacts along, but most of the reason we decided to do it was for our benefit. And even things like watching some of the documentaries that come out, reviewing material to keep our organizing sharp, and to just, in a sense, we committed one evening during the week so that we could keep up on top of things and not have to squeeze it in amongst everything else. And so that's been a real hit with the contacts too, coming in and participating in what's going on with this, with the New York series that's just finished. But we can play things like the Dynamics conference videos, if we haven't seen them. But whatever we feel is beneficial for our organizing at the time as well, given what's going on.
And I've noticed them doing that has actually prompted, not really that in particular, but getting them into a process. I find that some people, it's better to actually get them out organizing than just coming into the meeting.
Yeah.
It helps for them to come into the meetings, but recently we've had this one guy who, you know, I've got to read this and I've got to read that and I've got to soak this up and that up and blah, blah, blah. He's recently been coming out organizing with us. He's only been on 2 deployments, and they've both been very, very different. One was a climate change rally, for, you know, they think this is a climate change rally that they were saying we should do more in Copenhagen than we're doing. We went to that, and we were, you know, the odd ones out by far. He came to that, and then he came to a market, we call it some market, it's the Caribbean market down the road, and he came to that, and they were two very different deployments. But getting him out is actually starting to get him to act on what he's been reading, act on what he's been looking at, and he can also see what he knows and doesn't know. I think he's a bit scared, of course, because, you know, he's jumped in the deep end, but it's a lot, it's better getting him to act. We're trying to get him to actually start acting on what we know he wants to do, but there's a few different problems there, and that's sort of prompting him to get into it a bit faster than what he would not organising.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to continue that kind of strategy in the new year. We haven't sat down and discussed what the strategic outlook is going to be. I mean, it's quite obvious that what Craig laid out in the webcast is going to carry over, and it's kind of, in a sense, the shift to the Pacific's already happened. We have to organize our nation to be a useful part of that shift, given everything that Lyndon has laid out about Australia. So it was part of the reason we decided to do the webcast now rather than later as well. This is the shift that needs to occur. And to give people time over Christmas and whatnot to digest it, our orientation, we're going out with the webcast. The Pacific orientation works very well for us, considering that we're smack bang in the middle of it.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I mean, it's really just a continuation of this 300, 200 perspective. And to keep up this, focus on the intellectual work that we've been doing in a non-Cartesian way.
Which is why we're talking to you now, because it's not on our schedule. You're lucky we changed our way of looking at it, because, you know, we might not have been able to talk to you today because this is not on our
schedule. All right.
It wasn't that bad, but
you guys could all fly down to Australia for a while.
Oh, that'd be so much fun. We'll fund you. I shouldn't say that until I get confirmation that that's better be careful.
Yeah, you might have to pay for that, otherwise you might have to wait for someone to die. so we can't get their money out. We don't want to do that.
Yeah, right. Oh, God. We'll be waiting a while. Maybe we'll... Oh, no, I shouldn't say that on Skype. Hey, you can plot something. Not that you'd want to do that.
No.
So I'm just saying how ridiculous. How ridiculous.
No, that was pretty good. There's a lot of stuff to think about. But that's going to be... Because we have to report that to Luke and Matt. And also I'll report to the boomers, probably.
Hey, Jean-Philippe, who are the boomers? Can you name them, just so I know?
Yes,
sir. Yes. Gilles.
Christina. Christiane.
Christiane.
Christiane,
yeah,
it's too
Christiane.
Old, but name
is
Christiane.
There's Bob Hawks.
Oh, good.
Bob, yeah.
Who's Bob Hawk?
There's, you guys remember Birgit? Birgit Walker?
I'll forget, yeah. How could we forget?
There's,
How could we forget?
Is Ilko still there?
There's Ilko.
Oh, good.
Ilko's still there, uh-huh.
And is he going to
the U.S.? Is he what?
Has he been going to the U.S. on security with Lynn?
Yeah, yeah, still. And the other one is François Lépine, who was on the phone team. Paul has been mostly working. Paul Fraley. So I personally haven't seen him around for a while.
Funny.
How many of those are phone team and how many are field organizers?
Yeah, well, the field is Ilko, Brigitte, Bob, especially. The others, François just can't physically. It's hard for him physically. So he doesn't do it really. Jean Cuisin has been gone out for a very long time. I don't know if they've been out recently. Well, probably not with the weather. So that's what you got. Plus the youth. The youth has been still... We raise money and we managed to keep it, so we spend it for our own expenditure. So,
in your role, is Philip, are you, have you been two other things? Are you working on fundraising on films? And the question is, do you still have a rotation of American versus coming into Canada?
Boomers are not going to the United States except for security. Well, that is only Ilko anyway. And I personally have been... I'm raising funds with the contacts I have. I have long-term contacts. People like Nicolas, remember Nicolas Labelle? Maybe. So I have a bunch like that. Haven't been really working with the boomers. Like, I don't go really where they are. I just do my thing with the rest of the youth. And in the field has been a bit hard. I mean, we have to talk about it a bit more so the youth raise more funds. A bit like, you know, in Boston, they had certain important breakthroughs around that. So we've been raising some funds, not too much, but some, you know, useful amount of money.
Do you have any American boomers that come into Canada, like Gene Shank used to do?
Not
happen anymore?
Not really. There's there's Irene Beaudry. She's here for 2 weeks because she has family here. But Gene doesn't... We haven't seen other boomers for a very long time. But I don't think it's part of the... It's not part of the dynamic anymore, really.
What about youth coming up from Boston? Is that something that's been discussed?
We had Megan and Rihanna for a cadre school a couple of months ago. So they came for a few days after they went on a trip throughout the different locals to teach what they knew about Kepler and different other things. But right now, obviously, it's going to be very, very hard because of these mobilizations down there. So there were discussions about Ivan Korpis coming up, but basically it was not the right type of thinking. So no one came up. It's main, you know, with the mobilization there. I don't think if we ask for someone, the best answer would be no, because they have a shitload of things to do over there. So I wouldn't expect them to come up.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, as I was saying, for example, we know there's going to be a Catalyst School in Boston in maybe in March. So that's probably the type of thing that we're going to keep doing, going there for these Catalyst School. We'll see with their campaign. Probably going to be partaking into that somehow. I don't know how exactly, but probably somehow.
Mm-hmm.
You guys talk to, do you have anybody in the US who has a sort of a strategic overview of what Lynn is thinking about vis-a-vis Canada?
No, the people we talk to in the United States, I mean, there's Bruce, but Bruce has an understanding of who is here, but he doesn't like collaborate with us as to what Canada should do. He's just taking some notes about what we're doing. We had a discussion with the War Room a couple of weeks ago. We spoke with Natalie Lovgren. Because she was trying to get, she was discussing with people in South America or Mexico, and Mexico, about the space program. We thought it might be a good idea to include us into that type of discussion, which is basically, the idea was to get different locals to collaborate on the space program, and from that, being able maybe to shape a certain orientation for these locals. We haven't been following up, though. We haven't spoken to... It's actually pretty hard for us these days to reach the War Room for some reason. And we haven't... Okay, good. So, but no, we haven't pursued that. This discussion we're having now is like the most strategic discussion we've had for a while. So,
there's one person that we're in a lot of dialogue with is Al Douglas.
Yeah.
In Lisburg, and because of where Rachel Douglas is with Lynn, we get a very and because Al has done a lot of work within the Pacific Basin over the last 50 years, 40 years in particular, he has a very, very significant insight into Australia from an American perspective. And he's one of our very crucial sort of, he helps develop a lot of our strategy here as a way of, in a sense, helping us understand and also providing a lot of ideas and discussion points that sometimes you might overlook. In a sense, some of the stuff that we might have raised with you about Canada or about the way that we've done things here, you can, now you're thinking about specifically this idea of the carbon copying of the US. There's a big problem that we had with the movement for a long time is we just try to copy what was going on in the US and we wonder why it had fallen apart. And it's amazing how long you can do that process for before you realize that you just can't copy. But he plays a very significant role from the US perspective, and also he's in US time there, so it's probably not as bad for you, but I mean, in terms of the time zones, but for us it gets pretty annoying. So from that perspective, I was just wondering whether you guys did have anybody in the US. Does it make sense? Because it does help to have somebody who has, in a sense, a committed outlook to your nation.
Yeah, it does.
Especially in the context of how to translate what Lynn is saying over to your nation. That's the biggest difficulty that we're having with Percival at the moment.
But if there's nobody there.
Mm-hmm. You can't hear anything they're saying. If you're saying anything.
Or just saying that there is nobody like monitoring from the war room that's going on in Australia?
More or less. We're constantly chasing them amongst their schedule, which for us is very difficult because their evening is our morning. And
as you know now, like the time.
It really screws up our day if we have to work around their morning or their time frame. So we do it from time to time. But even though this discussion now is getting on 12:15 in the afternoon for us, when you start to say, well, we want to deploy, we've got these other things that we want to do, doing it every week really eats into these times. And unless we're chasing it up and setting it up, there's nobody there who has, in a sense, a strategic understanding of Australia. Since Lynn's really pushed this question of the Pacific, somebody may have been thinking about it a lot more, but nobody's picked up a phone or an email. They don't respond to any of the stuff that we're saying about the strategic situation
but
here.
We do send them
with
stuff.
The,
we don't get any replies about like the project that we've been getting, and like the homeowners and bank protection bill. I think Glenn sent it to what, 20 people, and you didn't get a response?
Not 20, but all the key people that I have like personally know, and I wanted them to have a look at it. I sent it, and now many of them watched it. However, they didn't have, there was no follow-up correspondence of any kind with us on the nature of that, how we're using it, the type of activity we've got going with it. So, yeah.
But also, I don't think it helps if they don't realise, one, they haven't been here, but two, they don't have a conception of what it's like here. There's not a subjective... Not that they don't care in a sense, but the subjectiveness, there's not a real subjective understanding or a want.
Yeah, the question
is... subjectively understand it?
Yeah, the other difficulty is because we understand that you can't use a cookie cutter or a carbon copy on a show. So we watch the off the cuff and then we talk to them and they tell us the off the cuff again, so to speak. It can get a bit sort of, okay, but how do we, they don't have an understanding of how to translate that into Australia because they obviously, they just...
Like Australia, well, I had one, it was like Australia, I just cared about Australia. It was like, no, that's not true, but you can't say America in Australia.
Trying to communicate to us that we've got a carbon copy, you know, what's going on there, here, without any conscious understanding of the different national culture that exists here, that we're not, we aren't the United States, we are an ally, we're sometimes called the 51st state of America, but we aren't the United States, and...
We are too.
You know, we're all, there's a lot of factors that they just don't know about.
Especially now that we've come up with this whole history documentation, for us, that's given us a different way of looking at where we've come from too. And if people don't understand that, well, how can you actually... You can collaborate, but it's a different level, there's a different... level. There's a different dynamic. There's a different level of understanding. There's a difference between going on the side, and there's a difference between, like, on the side, you know, forcing to it. Not that that's good. There's a different quality.
I remember it being, in a sense, the fact that when we were in Canada, and you get you just get on the morning update call or the evening update call, and that would be the marching orders for the day. But the point was is that those marching orders didn't 100% translate for Canada, especially Montreal. So, I mean, that's the difficulty that we're having at the moment. And hopefully we can resolve it over some time and find somebody who actually wants to take that on. So it's not, and we're still talking to them, but it's just, that's the advantage of somebody like Al Douglas, who actually has done a lot of work over a long period of time here, who has a commitment to this region of the world, because that's something that he's capable of doing, given everything that he's got.
But he himself, he sees himself as an Australian. Not that he's not an American, but he has adopted that subjective quality. He lives within, I don't know how to explain it.
See Manila, right?
What?
So we were just laughing because we're also being called the 51st state of the United States.
Oh, really?
We should go to war.
Yeah.
We should fight on who has that title.
We'll be our own nation states.
Well, what's that thing that they do? They what does the British do?
Divide and conquer, like you and him fight.
Yeah, we'll watch.
Yeah.
You and him fight, we'll watch.
Is that helpful?
It's okay, you can keep it.
that enough for you guys?
Yeah,
you,
well, that's a lot to think about. Yeah, no, that's a good that's a good start.
We should keep up this collaboration.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When you guys have a certain, you know, after all these discussions you're going to have with France and America and stuff, do let us know what sort of steps forward you have in mind, because I'm very curious to see what kind of national forward mission you guys are going to adopt. I mean, I know Lindsay's always talking about the importance of the development of Canada's resources. He's always talking about the importance of things like NWAPA. He's always talking about development. And it strikes me as interesting. Like, Lynn talks about Canada in a way where he treats Canada as a nation state. He doesn't look at it as being some form of, you know, appendage of the United States. But he looks at it as being a nation state. And he, in many ways, he talks about Canada as having different to Australia, but he always situates it within itself being a sovereign nation. And with all its uniqueness, unique qualities, but also with all its funny qualities as well. I mean, he always makes jokes about us having these marsupials, and we don't know how to breed properly down here, and we've got population problems.
Yeah.
You know, 20 million people, what are we doing? We haven't worked out how to breed yet, you know. I mean, similar. I mean, that's, I mean, how he's looking at it. So we should share his outlook and work out what the national orientation will be.
Did you guys get to discuss with Lynn before you went back? Did you get to meet with him or anything like that?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, good.
We had a chicken salad with him.
Because that was one thing. Not when we came back, I was in the war room at the time. So I got a chance to actually engage Lynn on the question of all of us going back to Australia and some of the anxieties around that. But as a whole, we didn't. So there's certain questions that were only resolved when we got back. But on the whole, I mean, that's an important thing. I don't know what he said to you, but I take that on board as primary.
One thing he stressed out was the obviously the development of the North, but you know, in the Wapa Bering Strait, but in, from the standpoint that Canadians, I mean, they needed to get optimistic. If you don't get them optimistic, you're not going to be able to do much, because you know we can do it. Technically speaking, we're, you know, like Australia, you can do a lot in terms of development. The potential is there, but if the mindset is to stay little or to stay, you know, to be affected by the rest of the world, and instead of affecting it, then you're not going to have much being done. Like, it was a very short discussion, obviously, but that was centered around that idea and the idea of Canada's development for the whole continent.
Yeah. You guys play an important role in the Pacific, too. Mm-hmm. Just not on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, look, we better keep moving over here. I think that definitely gets the brain juice going a bit.
Thanks, guys. That was good.
Well, we should do this again.
We'll do it in the new year, in January. That gives us 31 days to work out when to do it.
All right, that's a fair deal. So yeah, let's do that again, and then we'll let you know what happens with the other people we're gonna talk to, and maybe you're gonna have some feedback for us on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Good.
All right.
That's good.
All right.
So you guys take care.
Au revoir.
Bon. Elle est australienne. Je suis australienne. Oh,
mais il est stuck là-dedans. Wouh. Mm-hmm. Hey,
pas regarder le podcast. C'est correct, non? To-do list. Il est combien long, son webcast?
Il est long.
Bonne longueur. Ben, l'idée d'avoir 300 organisateurs, c'est vraiment une bonne idée.